paper published before our first child came along.
Well, I noted that that. Well, I want to talk about your postdoctoral work too, but that also had some effect of your on your going back to work at National Annalyn. Didn't
that's
that
right.
When your first child was born?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, I had been offered. In fact, after my National Research Fellowship ended. Have I mentioned what I worked on?
No, that's what I wanted to look at next, was what you had done at Harvard.
Yeah. Well, at Harvard...
And did Beattie arrange this?
No. No, he didn't. I decided myself that... Beattie, it was Keyes who... urged me to apply for the National Research Fellowship, and after I obtained it, and my wife, let's see, gosh, I can't remember whether she had already received her offer of appointment at the Harvard Medical School or not, but at any rate, I wanted to continue my postdoctoral research in Cambridge so that we weren't obliged to move.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was just because we had a lease that hadn't expired and I'd have to pay a penalty, or whether it was some other reason, I can't remember. My wife's postdoctoral appointment at the Harvard Medical School, but whatever it was, I thought that the experience I'd had at MIT would prove useful at Harvard, and I had an interview with Percy Bridgman, who had developed equipment for studying the properties of gases at high pressures and temperatures, at high pressures, but was not able to make very accurate measurements because his pressure measuring devices were quite primitive and weren't accurately calibrated. So I borrowed one of the MIT free piston gauges and used it to obtain a more accurate calibration of Bridgman's own equipment, and then used that for measurements of the PVT properties, the volumetric properties of nitrogen and argon at pressures up to the pressures at which they froze at temperatures. Let me see, how did this go? I measured the I measured the pressure volume temperature properties of nitrogen and argon at temperatures below 25 degrees centigrade and above their freezing point temperatures at pressures up to 6,000 atmospheres.
Mm.
And we published papers on my work on nitrogen, but I never got the work on argon written up for publication. And there's a couple of, there were a couple of papers that were published there on PVT properties of nitrogen.
Yes, yes.
I used two different oh dear. Can I see that?
Yes.
Please. Yeah. This first set of measurements were done at pressures that were too low to be measured. Accurately by Bridgman's rather crude method of measuring the temperature, measuring pressure, which was a resistance gauge, a Mangan wire. So I borrowed from MIT one of their free piston pressure gauges, had that moved up to Harvard, and used that for pressure measurements. And I developed a rather ingenious procedure for doing the density measurements. I had a small, I had to make it out of nickel, I think it was, because steel became brittle at these low temperatures. So I made a small, I can't remember what to call it, pressure vessel, not more than a half inch in diameter and 3 inches tall, attached to a nickel capillary tube, which I silver soldered together, and then immersed in a thermostat at the appropriate temperature, and compressed nitrogen, and I also did measurements with argon, compressed nitrogen into it at pressures that were measured on my free piston pressure gauge, and then sealed off the contents of this small nickel pressure vessel by clamping shut the small nickel capillary tube that had connected it to the pressure gauge, cutting off the capillary and silver soldering the end of the capillary shut, mm-hmm. weighing the assembled nickel and nitrogen or argon after it warmed up to room temperature, cutting the capillary, releasing the gas, and then taking the cut end and the rest of the vessel and weighing it again, so I'm getting by difference in the mass of the nitrogen that had been contained in it. It was a laborious, tedious way of proceeding because I could only make one measurement a day, but in that way I was able to map the PVT properties of nitrogen and argon at lower temperatures than the rest of Bridgman's equipment would have enabled me to measure it. I could get down to the triple point temperatures at minus 185 degrees centigrade. And those were then published in this paper 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then I extended the measurements to higher temperatures between minus 100 and, I forget, I'd have to look it up. Using the data I had obtained from these measurements by sort of gravimetric method as a fixed point, I was able to measure the change in density from that particular condition of temperature and pressure to other pressures and temperatures between minus 175 centigrade and plus 200 centigrade by measuring the motion of a piston in a piston compressor. And was able to obtain the relative specific volume or relative density to the fixed point that I had already measured at these lower temperatures. That enabled me to quote the or publish the densities of nitrogen between minus 175 and plus 200 degrees centigrade and pressures between 1,000 and 6,000 atmospheres. And that got published in 1937.
In working at these very high pressures, was there any safety problem?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We had to be very careful. We had a... I guess you could call it a explosion barrier if you want to, but a steel sheet between the equipment and where we were taking the measurements. Mm-hmm. And conducted everything by control from outside of the steel sheet. But I never had anything blow up on me. The quantity of gases used was rather small. Mm-hmm. It was just a gram or two, so that it wouldn't have been a very serious explosion at best. But it was a really splendid experience because Bridgman was, I wrote in my autobiography, was a master of experimental research on how to get a pertinent but not necessarily the most accurate results with the minimum amount of specialized equipment. It's really a very good experience for me.
How many other people were working with Bridgman at this time? Was that High Pressure Laboratory a big group?
It wasn't a big group, but there were several other people there who went on and had eminent careers. One of the persons that had worked with him and was by then a postdoctoral research associate at Harvard was a fellow named Francis Birch, who later became a professor of geophysics at Harvard and used many of Bridgman's techniques to measure the properties of geothermal solutions at high temperatures and pressures. And Chauncey Starr, who later became a vice president of, oh dear, a good friend of mine, I should remember this. Gosh, my memory's getting poor. I may have gotten that up what he did, though. Let me see. No, I didn't, but at any rate, the star became a prominent figure in... National. Oh, wait a minute. I met him many years later out in Southern California, but I can't remember whom he was working for out there. But at any rate, these were people that had prominent careers in chemistry after their experimental work with Bridgman. Well, after I had done this work on nitrogen and argon with Bridgman and had married, my wife had a professional appointment at the Harvard Medical School. I didn't want to leave the Cambridge vicinity because my wife would have had to give up her job at the Harvard Medical School. So I was offered a postdoctoral appointment as a research associate in geophysics by Professor Louis C. Grattan of the Harvard Geology Department, who was starting research on physical-chemical properties of solutions important in mineral deposition at the conditions deep in the earth of high temperature and high pressure. And he had one man, formerly a student of Bridgman, who was working for him, named Francis Birch. Have you ever heard of Francis Birch?
No, I haven't.
Well, he's a very eminent American geophysicist. And Birch was sort of in charge of a laboratory which was being operated for the Harvard's Committee on Geophysical Research, I guess it was called. Probably better look it up. National Research Fellowship with Bridgman ended on August 1st, 1936. My God, that was 55 years ago. I moved to the Gordon McKay Laboratory to start research for Harvard's Committee on Geophysical Research on solubility relations of aqueous solutions at high temperatures and pressures. This committee was interested in the conditions under which minerals might be deposited from aqueous solutions at high temperatures and pressures, and wanted experimental methods on the phase equilibria under these rather difficult conditions. Well, let me read a little bit of this. Theory predicts the existence of two types of aqueous solutions. In one type, such as the solution of quartz in water, the solubility of quartz is so low and the vapor pressure of water is so high that as the temperature is raised, critical phenomena occur in which liquid and vapor phases become identical in properties. In another type, such as potassium chloride in water, the solubility is so high and the vapor pressure of the solution so low that critical phenomena do not occur. When a mixture of potassium chloride and water is heated in a closed vessel under appropriate conditions, three phases, solid potassium chloride, liquid, saturated liquid solution, and vapor, can coexist at all temperatures below the eutectic, at all temperatures between the eutectic, which is below 0 degrees centigrade, and the melting point of potassium chloride, 770 degrees centigrade. The system potassium chloride and water was the one I selected to prove out the experimental equipment and the experimental method. Later, the equipment was used by Norman Keevil and others to measure systems of greater geologic significance because nobody cares very much about aqueous solutions of potassium chloride. I'd have been better advised if I used aqueous solutions of sodium chloride because this would be of geologic significance. But the reason I chose potassium chloride was it had a higher solubility in water, and I figured that its triple point temperature at which vapor, liquid, and aqueous solutions all occurred simultaneously would be more nearly within my experimental reach before the equipment became too weak because of its impaired elastic properties at high temperatures. At any rate, I did make measurements on potassium chloride in water. I did cellular triple point curve that we've developed. I think I will. If I was smart, I'd go to the table of contents first.
Is is that paper number 6?
Yep. On these points here,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to chase the temperature up to 600 mm-hmm. degrees centigrade before steel became too weak to go any further. But I did show that the pressure at which salt, aqueous solution, and vapor were in equilibrium went up through a maximum and started down again, because of the fact that the solubility of potassium chloride in water was increasing at such a high rate that the vapor pressure of the solution stayed below the critical pressure of water. And one could predict that this curve would continue to the triple point of potassium chloride in the absence of water altogether. So that it was kind of pioneering mm-hmm. research at that time. Later, another fellow came along, Norden Keevil, and worked with many other solutions of more significant geologic interest. But it was good research, and I was able to use the experience I'd had both with Beatty and with Bridgman to conduct the research successfully.
You and some of the other things you've done also show a combination of both developing out a process and then the experimental work, collecting data to verify
it. Yeah, I ceased to be an experimentalist so long ago.
I was going to ask you how you felt, because you're designing equipment, you're before you collect the data, you actually had to build the equipment. And did that give you the most satisfaction, the actual building of and constructing?
No, I'm ashamed to confess that I think I'm really more at home with using my mind than using my hands. And much of the successful experimental work I did was really dependent, highly dependent, on very able machinists or professors who knew experimental techniques rather than my own ability as an experimentalist. I had a very good mechanic machinist at MIT named Charles Gallagher, who was a very irascible Irishman, but was awfully good at designing and making fussy equipment. And at Harvard, I had the assistance of Bridgman's two, well, they were more than machinists, they were good people who knew how to do experiments, even though they were used mainly to make the equipment. The fellow that was most helpful to me was a fellow named Charles Ames, who made high pressure equipment I used to conduct these experiments with potassium chloride. For the work on nitrogen, I made my own equipment because I used Bridgman's pressure gauges, and I made my own small weight piezometer.
What about the...
Taking a lot of your time, and I haven't got very far.
Oh, no, this is fine. This is exactly what I want.
Incidentally, are you going to want to do something about lunch?
It's not important to me, so it's up to you.
I'm willing to wait another hour, but beyond that point, I'll probably run down.
All right.
I don't know. There's a dining room here that serves a very good lunches, and I'll be glad to take you there as
okay.
my guest.
All right, fine. Well, why don't we continue until you feel that you would like to stop? I'll let it up to you, because I'm fine.
Let me see if my wife is still here and find out what she has in mind. She may have gone off.
Well, I'm interested in your leaving Harvard and going back to National Annalyn.
Oh, well, there's a... I guess I better read this to you. Because of the addition to our family and Marjorie's enforced unemployment, she had been working previously at the Harvard Medical School, and together we had a quite comfortable joint income of some $4,500 a year. But at any rate, we needed more income than my own $200 a month salary as a research associate in geophysics at Harvard. So the first opportunity I had for work at higher pay after my one-year employment at Harvard ended on September 1st was an offer from Professor Keyes at MIT of a postdoctoral fellowship to work on low-temperature calorimetry. In retrospect, I realized that I made the right decision when I declined the offer, concluding that I had needed more diversified experience than just continuing as a research physical chemist at the university. I wrote Professor Papish at Cornell about a faculty position at Cornell, and Dr. Leo I. Dana, supervisor of a former associate of mine at MIT at Linde Air Products Company, about an industrial position at their research laboratories near Buffalo. Now I'm going to read you some more of this.
Sure.
Chauncey Starr, who was a... You know who Chauncey Starr is? He was the president of one of the pioneering companies in nuclear power development many years later. But at any rate, then he had been a fellow research associate at Harvard. He recommended me for position in the Brown Paper Company's research laboratory in Berlin, New Hampshire, where he was temporarily employed. In a hurried one-day trip, I drove to Bridgman's summer home in the White Mountains, left with him manuscript of my papers on nitrogen, and had a successful interview with Dr. Scher of Brown Paper Company, who offered me a position doing fundamental research on the hydration of cellulose at a salary of $250 a month. But I had also made other applications. I made a three-day trip to Ithaca and Buffalo. In Ithaca, I had no success in an application for a teaching position at Cornell. In Buffalo, I drew blank with the Linde Air Products Company, to whom I'd also applied for work, but was welcomed royally by Frederick Kranz, for whom I had formerly worked at the National Annealing and Chemical Company. Kranz insisted that I see Dr. Minnis, then director of research for National Annealing. He offered me a position in National's research laboratory at $275 a month, which was $75 more than I was making at Harvard. to do fundamental research on the kinetics of oxidation of benzene to maleic anhydride in an attempt to improve the yield of that national research product. Well, let me read you some more. On my return home, my wife and I weighed the pros and cons of my two job offers. To work in Berlin near the White Mountains would be much pleasanter than in grubby Buffalo. But Berlin was professionally isolated. Cellulose chemistry wasn't exactly my dish. And a higher national salary was a factor, so we decided to shuffle off to Buffalo.